Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Into a seventh minute of added time we go. Spurs might think they can win it now. It's played through for Fred Vine again, who's in and might be able to win it. Round Schmeichel and in! This is incredible!
Well, hello and welcome everybody to a joyous version, thank God, of The View from the Lane, the Tottenham Hotspur podcast from The Athletic. I'm Danny Kelly, and because church bells are ringing out across the land and every village is festooned with bunting, I'm joined today by the full firm. Jack Pitbrook, Charlie Eccleshare and James Moore are here. Jack, we'll start with you, as you were privileged enough to be in the King Power Stadium for the game last night, at the end of which, probably in a handbrake turn from what you were getting ready to write, you described it as a mini Ajax.
Yeah, it was a little bit like Ajax. You know, nothing will ever be Ajax. You know, that is a unique moment in Tottenham's history, and I think in football history. But it did feel a little bit like it. You know, not just the scoreline, but the unbelievable lateness of it, the sort of implausibility of it, that sense of you kind of sat there in the press box, seeing all of the Spurs players tearing towards the away end. It's different from Ajax, because in Ajax, the away fans were high up, I think, whereas here, they're kind of, it's a single-tier stadium and they're right in the corner. Seeing all the away fans come down towards them, and you're sat there thinking, how on earth has that happened? I have no idea how that's happened. What an amazing thing to happen. And so it's, mini Ajax is the word that immediately sprung to mind watching it. And look, there's tons of other stuff we can get into about the performance overall, which I thought was really good. Lots of individuals were good. It was a great game.
The manager was good.
Even the manager was great. Even if I had, I have a bit of an emotional investment in Tottenham winning, but even if I was a pure neutral, I would say it was an incredible game. Like, I thought it was a brilliant game, even at 2-1, even if the wrong team was going to win at that point. But the ending was just incredible. Like, it kind of blew the heads off everyone there. And I'm sure that everyone who was there or who watched it on TV will remember it for an awfully long time.
Let me just go round and see how you all reacted emotionally and physically. And some of you, of course, will have had to change your copy. I'll start with you. Of course, I'll start with you, James. What was your response?
I had to genuinely apologise to my neighbours, genuinely.
Ah!
So I went out of the front door after the game just to get a little bit of fresh air and clear my head. And the guy next door was just coming out of his flat with like a very confused look on his face. Because as much jubilation as there was after 97 minutes of the game, there were a lot of expletives being uttered in my flat in the kind of hour and a half before that. So,
is your neighbour a football fan?
I don't think so, no.
Oh, so he wouldn't have got it then?
I think he would have. He may have realised what was going on, but yes. He's certainly very confused when I walked out of the front door with a massive grin on my face, like after an hour and a half of abusing people.
Yeah, what about you, Charlie? What did you make of the ending there?
Well, it was weird. Yeah, mixed, because I was sort of, I had a positive COVID test, so I wasn't there. And obviously a part of you was like, oh, that looks amazing.
Are you okay?
Yeah. Completely asymptomatic.
Good.
And it's about to end, thankfully. So salvation is on its way. But yeah, so haven't had a bad at all, nothing. But yeah, no one cares about that. Yeah, I mean, I was readying my I had a tweet drafted, and this just shows how sort of mad football is. Had this tweet drafted saying, you know, first defeat of the Conte in the Premier League of the Conte era, and actually he's only got two more points from his first nine games than Mourinho did, and he's had, you know, a fairly gentle fixture list, so you know the challenges ahead. And then obviously it just completely flipped. I mean, I literally was writing that as Højbjerg picks up the ball to float that pass to Matt Doherty, and it just completely flips. And now, you know, and I think last week I was trying to give the positive, saying that it is about these matches will decide their season, not Chelsea. And I think that was borne out, because I was really encouraged. They looked so much better than Leicester. And it's a weird game, really, because the point they got to was torturous and circuitous, and they were only ahead for literally, what, 3 seconds of the game. But they were on top of it for so much of it. And, like, the chances they created, I thought they actually should have won that game pretty comfortably on the balance of play. But, yeah, just amazing. And, you know, you do wonder what that does for the team going forward, you know, how big that is for them, because it felt like a massive, massive moment.
Are we saying there are kind of Villa Park 2014 vibes about that?
That's an
the Harry Kane defensive free kick that we kind of talked about a few times before as being like the one that spurred the Pochettino revolution. It kind of feels like it could be a bit like that. I know I said this about the Liverpool game, I think, as well, but this is probably a better example of that. It's just going to give the players such a lift. And it is a bit of a shame to have Chelsea on Sunday. And I mean, I know Chelsea are in pretty bad nick actually at the moment, and maybe we'll be almost as worried about playing Spurs, although not over the last two games or anything to go by.
On this morning, I've got to say, James, that's two Spurs fans to start worrying about the fact that the fixture list doesn't look right for you. We've got to play Chelsea twice a year. You have to suck that up to some extent.
Four or three times in a month.
Of course, yes. I mean, it was so, so exciting. And again, like you, I've got a little notebook where I keep, you know, occasional notes about what's going on in the football match, so it's a job of my memory when we do these podcasts. And I wasn't miserable last night when they were 2-1 down. They had played so well. I thought sometimes this is why the game of football is important. It's not an exhibition, it's a contest, and the lesser team has somehow contrived to win this game. Take the positives out of the way Spurs played. For them to play that well and then get an equaliser, which I was really delighted about, was one thing. To go on and win the game, as Jack was saying, so deep into the game, because I think that is by far the latest a team has been behind and gone on to win a game, that will probably never be beaten. I can't imagine circumstances where that will happen again. I think it's in the top six most expected goals an away team has had in the entire history of the Premier League. They played so well. They're the away team who are not a great team. They had 27 shots at goal. Now, one or two of them, of course, were Harry Kane attempting to hit the Melton Mowbray pork pie factories, some way distant from Leicester.
No, they had plenty of massive chances. I mean, even before Leicester went ahead, they had four really big
chances.
Oh,
Kane could have had six goals on a decent night, couldn't he? He's useless.
Yeah. So, yeah. I have to say, I thought he played so well.
I thought that was the best. I mean, we definitely said this before, but I do think that was the fittest overall Kane performance I can remember in ages. You know, he had the one cleared off the line, he had the header against the bar, he had the one where he ran in behind and skied it, where you would expect him more often than not to hit the target. He also jumping to win that header in 95 minutes. You know, one thing that I know that people have pointed to with Kane a little bit in the last few years is that when he's not on top of his game, he doesn't really compete and win for headers in the same way. And then that incredible pass that bisected Vestergaard and Soyuncu, I think it was.
And was waited so Schmeichel couldn't come out.
Bergwijn,
it was just perfect.
And like, there's hardly anyone else in the, not even just at Tottenham, but in the league who can play that pass.
No, I mean, when they were picking the man of the match on TV, and you may not.
It was James Maddison.
It was James Maddison. And I'm just thinking, he wasn't even Leicester's best player. Their goalkeeper was by far their best player. But the best player on the pitch by a million miles, and I am prone to hyperbole, I know that, was Harry Kane. He is a fantastic footballer. Whatever about England captain, the shenanigans in the summer, if you just take your whatever coloured blinkers you're wearing off and watch him play like last night, he was just fantastic.
And that's why I don't worry too much about his... I mean, he's obviously in a bit of a finishing slump relative to his normal standards. You know, we saw that in the Liverpool game in December, for example, he had lots of chances, didn't really convert enough of them. But it's so important that he's getting back in those positions again. He's getting shots away. He's been in a huge shot slump over the last year or two. Everyone knows this. But not only is he looking fitter and sharper than ever, he is contributing in terms of passing and assists, and is getting in shooting positions. So when his shooting when his finishing returns, as I'm sure it will, because why wouldn't it? I do think we're kind of Kane is certainly heading in the right direction again.
I thought he was rubbish in the second half, up to injury time. Like, he was, I mean, he was fantastic in the first half, genuinely. In the second half, I thought he was really bad. Did no one else think that? I wonder whether you're sort of rewriting history a little bit, because, you know, he was, you know, good involvement in both goals, and that pass for the second, or the third goal, sorry, was incredible. And Jack is right. There are very few players in the Premier League that can play that ball. But between 45 and 94, All he was kind of doing was shooting from 35 yards when he could have played other players in.
I don't know.
I found that incredibly frustrating.
I didn't get that impression.
There were a few where he linked up pretty well down the right. He was feeding in Doherty and this sort of thing. Also, there was a moment, I think maybe in the first half, just on the is he making an effort point, where he charged back and made a really important tackle. Because he did that in the North London Derby and got really unlucky. And this one, he didn't. And it was actually really important for the team. And even before yesterday, I was seeing, I think he's averaging four, before yesterday, and it'll be even higher now, he was averaging four shots a game under Conte in the league. And that's really encouraging, given that, as Jack mentioned, his numbers were way, way down before. He just wasn't getting the shots away. You know, he wasn't even getting the chances. And that's why, like yesterday, for that one that he skied, yeah, you'd obviously expect and want him to score. But the way he just breezed past the Leicester defenders was really encouraging, because there'd been games early on, even in the, early on in the Conte era, where he really looked off it. Defenders just, you know, he just couldn't beat defenders.
Yeah, I would say his movement in the first half, particularly, like you say, the two times he went through, I would say like he glided up the pitch and between defenders or past defenders in a way more impressive way than he, even probably under Mourinho, I think.
Mm.
Like that we've seen probably since like pre-European Cup
that,
final, maybe?
That run in behind that he made onto Winks' pass for the first goal, that's exactly what you want Kane to do. For me, that's always, whether or not Kane is running in behind is kind of a barometer, a bit of his fitness and sharpness. Because if he's not on top of his game, it's always easier for him to come deep and get on the ball and play passes. But if he is really fit and sharp, he still does have the capacity to make that run. And that's something he's not, if we're honest, he's not really done that much. I mean, he didn't really do it that much under Mourinho, and he barely did it at all under Nuno. So for him to score that goal, which, you know, as a lot of people know, was pretty similar to the goal that he should have scored away
to Hampton. Yeah, it was the Winks assist again.
That was unfairly VAR'd, and like that was also set up by Harry Winks. The fact that Kane could score that goal, and for it not to get disallowed by VAR, as everyone was expecting it to, does, you know, is certainly a positive sign.
Just for the interest of balance, because there'll be people shouting, he won't play against a defence that play a high line and have as slow defenders every week. I mean,
That's true.
It reminded me of Southampton 5-2 at St Mary's last year, where they did a similar thing, and on that day they had Son, so they really exploited it. But it did seem it was bizarre from Leicester.
Soyuncu, Vestergaard, and Hamza Chowdhury, centre back.
Yeah.
Oh well, I know. The just two things. I'm still relatively new to the view from the lane. I'm learning about you. I've just written down here: never work for James Moore. Cannot be satisfied. Those are the words I've written down.
High standards.
Yeah.
The other thing is Kane is. He's a funny one, isn't he? There, you could probably all name one footballer you know who is not a particularly fast runner, but moves faster with the ball at their feet than they do in normal running. Eden Hazard, when he's fully fit, is quicker with the ball at his feet than he is just running. Harry Kane, if he's properly fit and enjoying his football, he moves quicker when he's got the ball at his feet. Some of that's upper body strength. You know, people can't get close enough to make the tackle. I thought there were times last night he was doing that. And to finish this bit about the mood of Harry Kane, about which we've talked a lot, of course, his post-match interview where he's grinning from ear to ear. We haven't seen that for 6 months at least. So
like running to the fans at the end of the game as well. It kind of feels, I don't know, it's easy to read too much into that sort of stuff, but that does feel quite significant, doesn't it? That like, and he like posted like a happy picture on Instagram that I don't think he's done too many times this season.
Why wasn't Bellegrin sent off? He'd already been booked and then he ran into the crowd.
Now who's being negative?
Yeah.
Oh no, I just want the referees to be consistent.
Yeah,
you know, all we asked for.
Get that VAR.
But, and also Hugo Lloris was in the crowd. I mean, he'd had to run 115 yards to get into the crowd. That was lovely, wasn't it?
Lucas taking that bloke's hat off.
Can
we just talk a little bit about Soyuncu's shithousing before the
second
goal?
That was...
Go on then, do it.
I mean, I'm sure people would say, Leicester fans are probably Arsenal fans, would say Bergwijn went down quite easily under that challenge. Was that from Chowdhury?
I think
it was actually just outside. I mean, you've seen them given, to use the cliche. But not by good referees, I haven't.
Well,
possibly not. But yeah, there was obviously that like sort of coming together and a bit of a fracas. And that like the time added for that is when Bergwijn scored the third goal, right?
Yeah.
You mean when Bergwijn pushed him in the chest and he held his face?
Yeah. The time that was added on because of that. And also, if you look back at the three goals, I believe Soyuncu was on his arse for all three when they went in the back of the net.
Yeah, I think so.
Should say as well, made the point on Twitter, like how Højbjerg was sort of, well, two people I want to mention. Højbjerg was one who made a really important tackle to deny Barnes, which could well have gone in, made it 3-1. That's game over. Then he plays a really good pass to Doherty for the equaliser. And then he plays the pass to Kane for the third goal. And it was interesting just because when Winks got taken off, There was a lot of people on my Twitter timeline saying, how is Højbjerg still on the pitch? Why is it that he doesn't get taken off? And I think a lot of people have felt that. And I had sympathy with that view at that point because I thought Winks was playing pretty well. But fair play to him because he did then step up. And the other guy was Doherty, who actually playing in his proper position for one of the only times since he's been at the club, looked way better. And I think it showed to me why Spurs are so desperate to get an attacking right wing back. Because the threat they had, the fact that they had a threat off each flank, you know, that sound is hardly revolutionary, but it made a massive difference. And Doherty,
it looks so much better with that shape.
So much better.
And like the sort of symmetrical nature of it just meant that there were just so many more options at any point. Yeah. Whenever they had the ball, there were like runners either side.
I think that was Doherty's best performance for Tottenham in terms of like the number of times he was getting in the box. He was getting like not very good shots away. He was just driving into the box and basically causing havoc, which is basically what happened with the second goal. You know, they got a bit lucky on the second
they
goal.
They did, but that really was his game. That was his game.
It was a really good ball from Højbjerg. And then obviously Doherty chests it down quite well. Then Soyuncu but tries to get it away and just falls over and it falls to Bergwijn. But it was really good to see Doherty because he's had a pretty tough time.
It's easy to retro-engineer the team after you get a famous and fantastic victory like that. But someone explained to me, you've all got PhDs in football, how the midfield three of Højbjerg, Skip and Winks, which had looked, say, a Crystal Palace so dreadful, there fires a team to, well, statistically, one of the best away performances by any team in the Premier League this season. How did that happen?
One shot on target at Palace, I think. One of the worst performances I think Tottenham.
The worst of the season.
And yet yesterday, what made it work is that in the last two games when Tottenham have played a sort of 3-5-2, they've had two guys at the base and then Lo Celso pushed forward as a 10. Whereas yesterday, the triangle was inverted. So Winks was playing in front of the defence and then Højbjerg and Skip either side of him were pushed on. And that meant they really made the most of Højbjerg and Skip's pressing. I thought they both pressed really, really well, which really helped Tottenham get a foothold in the game. It meant that they were also better at building up from the back, which is something which they've not really been that good at recently. So Winks was able to get the ball off the defence, play passes. Obviously, it was Winks' pass through to Kane, which set up the first goal. And there were moments in that first half when Tottenham were trying to establish themselves where they would disrupt Leicester by Winks dropping all the way back into the defence and then Tanganga, the right-sided centre-back, pushing all the way out into a kind of orthodox right-back position, which in turn allowed Emerson Royal to go really, really high up as a kind of right-winger. So it would almost, the formation would almost kind of flip into almost a sort of 4-4-2 type thing. So it was really, you know, it worked really well. You know, there were so many people, including me, beforehand on Twitter, griping about the midfield and thinking it would be rubbish. But in fact, it worked perfectly.
Another person who needs a lot of praise here is the manager, because whatever about the early selection, the halftime change of Emerson Royal off and Matt Doherty on, and that, of course, in the teeth of the fact that he is currently the player at least liked by the Spurs fans, Matt, I thought that was A, courageous, and B, as it turned out, a brilliant piece of insight into the way, perhaps into the way that Emerson Royal wasn't playing rather than the way that Matt Doherty came on and played. But it does, I wouldn't have done it at half time, but that's why he's on the big bucks, I guess.
Maybe you two are wrong to call for his head last week and call him a fraud.
Well, let's wait and see.
I do think as well.
I bet you we're in sometime in the next 15 years, I bet you he gets the sack at Spurs.
Can I just predict now? Because I said this to someone the other day. Thomas Tuchel will be the Tottenham man. It will become Tottenham manager in 2024.
All Chelsea managers, they always get a chance, don't they? They always get a chance.
But basically, that for that three to work as well, I do. Liverpool were the best team in Europe, won the Premier League with a central midfield three of Fabinho, Wijnaldum and Henderson, none of which you'd call especially creative. They did it obviously because their width came from the flanks. They did also have a world-class front three. But I think if you are to play with a central midfield trio like Spurs did yesterday, you do, for that to really work like it did, you know, in the second half especially, I think you do need to have threat from the flanks. And I thought Reguilon coming back was massive. Like I know he's not to everyone's taste, but the difference it makes having him compared to Doherty playing as like an inverted wing back. I mean, one of the things that is so baffling was the other week when Conte played Doherty left wing back and Sessegnon right wing back. So had two inverted wing backs. But maybe he's just experimenting, because yesterday the difference, especially when Doherty came on in the second half, and that is what he did at Wolves. He was this weird like goal poaching wing back. You know, we think of wing backs, you know, creatively as getting forward, putting in lots of low crosses and that sort of thing. His game was sort of being a goal poacher, and kind of like he was yesterday. He almost scored. I think it would have been disallowed for offside, having made a very similar run to the one he then made for the one that led to Bergwijn's equaliser.
He's an agent of chaos.
He is. Yeah,
chaos
he really
is.
You just
got to
get him on the ball, get him into the box, get him just putting the ball in, get him running onto the end of things, and people don't know what's going to happen next.
He cuts inside on his wrong foot and heads for the penalty spot. It's a very odd thing for defences to deal with if he can do it.
Well, he scored that one against City, I think a last minute winner when they were 2-0 down and 1-3-2. Wasn't that him, Jack? And he played a 1-2 and scored, and then there was that one against Palace Palace away for Wolves where he played a 1-2 and scored. And he did one with Kane where he played it. And you saw it was head down, charging into the box, and it is quite hard to deal with.
He needs to believe in what he's doing, doesn't he? Everything that he does, you could do from the right side of midfield. The Republic of Ireland, because they've got Coleman as well, have tried him recently playing just as a right-sided midfielder. He was baffled by the whole thing.
Well, but it is interesting because last year I asked him soon after he joined, and he was playing as a right back. I said, how different is it? And it almost felt like he was quite pleased to be asked the question so he could explain it's very, very different. And I think people do kind of assume right back, right wing back are kind of interchangeable, often because people are doing it the other way. They're going from being a right back to then playing as a wing back, and it's quite liberating. They're like, oh, this is great, I can get forward more. Doing it the other way, then having to learn that one of the most important things for you is where's my position relative to my centre back? What's our line to play offside? Things that as a right wing back, you don't really have to worry about so much. And I think it has affected him. It's been hard for him. And maybe we have slightly underestimated that.
The three in midfield, I think it was the first time, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that seeing Skip use his transformed physicality. I thought the closing down was fantastic, but also one or two of the runs he made. Now, admittedly, Leicester's defenders are slow enough to make your runs look pretty good. Another one who had Kane, give or take, James is allowed, but not taken seriously, criticism. I thought it was Kane's best game of the season. I thought it was Skip's best game of the season. It was Doherty's best game of the season. What a lovely, lovely thing. Anyone want to talk about Skip for a while? Because he's been floating in and out of the team just now, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, his pressing was absolutely essential to how Tottenham got a foothold in the game on the right of that front three at the start. I thought he was fantastic. This might be nonsense, but does he remind anyone of James Milner at all? He's got that kind of endless energy. He can run all day, sort of stocky build. He's very intelligent. He's very selfless.
Like temperament as well.
It's all about the team. It's not a kind of
proper model pros, both of them.
Doing anything silly on or off the pitch. And it's just an incredibly, like, seemingly... And I reckon that, like Milner, if they tried to stick him in a different position, he would figure it out quite quickly.
100%. I also think
industrious.
He does work. But I've said this before on this podcast. He is a lot quicker than people realise. And there was a moment at Molineux earlier in the season in the Carabao Cup game, and he charged back and won the ball off Traore. Like, it wasn't just the fact he was up against some slower players yesterday. Like, he's rapid, and he's got this incredible engine. I mean, he's just such an exciting player to have. And seeing an academy guy come in and just improve before your eyes is amazing.
And if we know anything about Conte, it's that if you were to draw up a list of things that Conte wants in a player, one, physical fitness, two, like selflessness and willing to subsume themselves to the team, three, like ability to learn and implement complex orders and instructions on the pitch dutifully. He ticks every single Conte box possible.
He's been created in a Conte lab.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like perfect.
I imagine that Conte is thrilled that he's got such a kind of high performance, low maintenance player as Skip to put in the team.
And can I just say, the commentator made a point that Leicester had three of their own trainees on the pitch. The Spurs started with four. In a world where we're going nuts always about making sure, you know, you spend a lot of money in transfer windows, it's still worth remembering that you can produce your own players if you give them a chance and all the rest of it. So I thought that was a lovely part of it as well. Mm. We'll have to take a break from what is effectively the aural equivalent of an open-top bus parade down the Seven Sisters Road. This is the view from the lane. They're all here, James and Charlie and Jack. And we are still waving to the adoring crowds as we pass the Chick King outside the ground.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Welcome back to The View from the Lane, a very cheery version of The View from the Lane this morning as we reflect further on Spurs' amazing, not just by Spurs standards, but by football standards, late win at Leicester. Charlie Eccleshare, Jack Pitbrook and James Moore are the assortment of voices you're hearing. And the producer reminded us that the world is not always a garden filled with roses and butterflies. He says there are some negatives, but even they are interesting negatives, I think, and good problems for the managers to have. One of the things that struck me, because we're what are we now, 10 days less away from the end of the transfer window, is has this affected the transfer planning? Because Bergwijn was supposed to be going to raise money to get Traore, as I understood it from reading The Athletic and other lesser outlets. Matt Doherty was supposed to be on his way for similar reasons. They both had games where, I mean, Bergwijn, if he was to go now, Charlie, that would look like a poor optics almost.
Yeah, I was talking to people about this, and given that the issue already was that Ajax weren't going as high as what Spurs wanted, you feel now Spurs can go that little bit higher and it's going to be even harder for Ajax to get there. I always find it interesting with this, because like when Dele had that good game against Liverpool and people were like, you can't sell Dele now.
No,
but
quite.
The thing is, you do have to plan. I also think the flip side of that is if you have a long-term plan, you also shouldn't be derailed by like one good performance against Liverpool. In this instance, though, I think we were already, what we were hearing was that, you know, Bergwijn was going to be, wasn't so likely to go, certainly as it had looked a couple of weeks earlier. So now that one probably less so. Doherty, I think if Spurs are smart, they'd be thinking this might actually get us a buyer for him. Whereas up until now, no one's gone near him. And I don't imagine Conte, knowing what we do about him, is the kind of guy who'll be like, you know what? Yeah, everything's going to be all right. I'm sure he'll still be thinking, we need to improve. It doesn't matter that we've won this game. We need to be better. We need to bring in more players and we need to work harder. So I don't think it will change too much in what he's demanding. But ultimately, win or lose against Leicester, they weren't going to conjure up cash out of nowhere. So I don't think it changes things massively. We know they were working on deals anyway, and they're going to still be working on those deals. And hopefully, you know, someone might come in for Doherty, or they're more likely to now anyway.
Maybe Doherty played so well that he's proven that Tottenham don't in fact need Adama Traoré.
Yeah,
well, and amazingly, that... he's also part of the equation in the sense that Wolves, you know, if Wolves wanted Doherty back, it would be easier for Tottenham to get Traoré. By the same token, if Doherty plays really well, maybe Wolves will think, you know what, he's really good, let's get him back. And in doing so, will allow Traoré to go to Tottenham and will kind of undermine his own... and will kind of effectively cost him his place. So it could go either way.
But equally, you could argue that when Wolves were at their very, very best 2 years ago, before the injury to... Jimenez.
Had them both.
The best thing... Well, that's when both of those players were playing their absolute best, when they're playing inside and outside of each other.
So, and wait a minute, who is the man... Spurs should get the manager from that Wolves team as well. Just to really... Who is that again? Ah, yeah, okay. No, done that already.
I was just wondering whether there was any chance that Wolves might have watched the first half of that game and decided they'd quite like the look of Emerson Royale. Unfortunately, it seems unlikely.
Bless him. I mean, Emerson Royale doesn't sulk. He tries to get on what he does. At the moment, it's very hard to nail down exactly what it is.
I think Emerson Royale has a future as a right-sided centre-back if he's going to play, if he's going to be at Spurs. I think he'd be far more suited to that in a way that like Azpilicueta became that. I think he could do that quite well because then his getting forward would almost be like a bonus, like the way it is with Ben Davis, who Ben Davis couldn't play as a left wing-back now, but coming from deeper positions where no one tracks him, is good, and I think Royale could do that well, and he's a good defender. So I don't think it would necessarily be the end for him as and when they bring in an attacking right wing back.
I mean, I rarely refer to the handful of questions that the producer prepares for us for these, but anybody want to, in the current joyous hat on the side of the head mood, want to reflect on the fact that Spurs, having played so well, were in fact 2-1 down in the 94th minute?
Well, they conceded two really bad goals in the break. I thought that we all know it's not the first choice defence. I don't think they've been great, those three, since they've been playing together in the last four games. So yeah, there's obviously, they're a long way away in that sense. I think defending against the counter-attack, they're not that good.
It's a little bit of good fortune for Leicester as well on both of those goals. I mean, you know, it's not the first time Reguilón's made that kind of mistake in the six-yard box. But it's sort of, the ball has fallen quite fortunately for Dakar on the first goal. And the second one, Tanganga has basically put past Lloris, isn't he? He's basically got across the shot from Maddison and tipped it onto the near post past Lloris. So, you know, those are the margins that are kind of quite narrow.
It's interesting you should say that because, of course, in the semi-final of the Carabao Cup, half Chelsea's goals were deflections in off Spurs' defenders. And I can't work out quite whether it's because they're not quite in the right position or whether under Conte they're now making extra effort, Højbjerg style, to block shots, and you're inevitably going to get some deflections. At the moment, they're going past Lloris, and another time, maybe they wouldn't.
And I guess if you were being hypercritical, you'd say they were playing a mid-table team who were missing, 10 players or something. What I would say, though, on the defensive point, they have Dyer and Romero coming back, and that's absolutely massive. You know, imagine if that was their first-choice defence, you'd be saying, thank God we're in a transfer window because they can hopefully bring in one, maybe two. Well, they've got Dyer and Romero coming back, and we've seen so little of Romero. I mean, Jack and I were talking about this the other day. He's played twice under Conte, and he got sent off in one of them. So that could make an enormous transformative difference to a defence that actually had only conceded four goals in Conte's eight league games prior to last night. And it's still, so that's 6 from 9. That's still very good. But yeah, having those two players back, I think, does offset the worries because the defence Spurs are currently playing is just a bit second, third choice.
I'm glad you said that. It is worth noting that Leicester deserves some credit. They could probably have got that game called off if they'd pressed any button with the Premier League, but they decided they wanted to play the match. And until 94 and a half minutes in, they would have been delighted with what some of their second string were doing. More South American World Cup qualifiers in what is clearly the most daunting tournament on the planet coming up. What do we know about Spurs' absentees? Oh, it's different this time because the absences, while it will involve a lot of travel, won't involve being isolated when you get back, as I understand. Got some grip now on the rules again to do with the COVID. Is that right?
Yeah, there's no more red list. So they will not have to go to Dubrovnik for 10 days to train.
Maybe they will, though. They just liked it so much that they'll go back there.
Yeah, maybe
they
got a great deal on a hotel and they think it's the best place to recuperate. But as it happens, so Lo Celso is in the Argentina squad for that, but Romero is not. So those are two World Cup qualifiers. So Argentina got Chile away next Thursday, the 27th, and then they've got Colombia at home up against Sanchez, of course, who's in the Colombia squad, on Tuesday, the 1st of February.
Was he a late call up to that squad? Because I know he's been left out of the team for
some
time.
No, he wasn't. And apparently the other centre-back is injured, so he will almost certainly be playing, Sanchez. He's sort of come back into favour, having, there were big doubts about him, and they're quite chuffed with how much better he looks under Conte. And Emerson Royale's with Brazil as well.
Is that right? Worth noting that Brazil squad has shown that these players, particularly ones in Europe, who have been very proudly not getting vaccinated, will now be revealed because that Brazil squad has had to be changed because they chose, I can't remember the name of the fella, to play at full back, and he had been vaccinated, and I think Paraguayan authority says, then you're not coming into the country. So Alex Telles of Manchester United has been called up instead. And what we saw with Novak Djokovic in Australia, even with the relaxation of the restrictions in England, the French authorities are not going to have Novak. We've got the Winter Olympics coming up where, according to some of my colleagues on another piece of work I do, the restrictions on journalists, never mind the athletes, make it almost impossible to go unless you're vaccinated to the hilt and all the rest of it. Of course, I don't know which of you are very big on anti-vaccination and outside the Houses of Parliament screaming and shouting every day. So
Who would you guess is the most likely?
Oh, James.
Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely, James. Yeah. What you're telling me to F off? Everybody else is nodding sagely, and they know you. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
His standards are so high. He was just like, Pfizer can fuck off. Not for me,
mate. I'm triple Pfizer, mate. Triple Pfizer.
What about, no doubt it's better for Spurs to play Chelsea in the Premier League, having won at Leicester rather than having drawn or lost, as seemed possible. Is anybody in the mood for a brief preview of the Chelsea game? Or should we pretend it's not happening and just continue to bask in the joy that the game against Leicester brought us?
And Thomas Tuchel was incredibly negative after their midweek game, wasn't he? He was talking about how tired they were again, which I always think is kind of iffy for a manager, because you're kind of planting the seed of that excuse in the head of your players. And like Leicester, they've got players missing, not as many, probably only like kind of four or five now.
They've got some pretty good backup players.
We've seen that twice in the last three weeks.
Yes, we have, yeah.
Poor them having to play like an £80 million reserve or whatever it is. I mean, the thing that's good about it is beating Leicester makes this even more of a free hit. Spurs have margin for error now in going for the top four. They can go ahead of Chelsea by, I think, a few points if they win all four games in hand or whatever it is, which obviously is a big if. But, you know, like I said last week, they can losing to Chelsea, losing to City, losing to Liverpool won't define their season, because most of their rivals will. So they can go, and obviously it would be really frustrating to lose, but it's not a must-win game for them. It's not a must-draw game for them. By beating teams like Leicester, they have a bit of margin for error in these much, much harder games.
The way we're all set up data-wise these days, unbeaten runs. Of course, now Conte is unbeaten in his first 9, 10, is it? How many games has he been in charge of?
Nine league games, yeah.
Nine. If that's going to end, then let it end somewhere where it's absolutely predictable. Otherwise, it tends to have a more focused, I think, negative on the team than would normally be the case. Listen, this has been a joy. And after a couple of semi-finals in the Carabao Cup that led to people saying that we were actually being miserable to get clicks. Quite how that works, unless you're Morrissey, I don't know. But we try and reflect the feelings we have as people. Some of us Spurs fans, some of us are not. We just try and reflect the way you feel about these things as people. And I was delighted that James pulled us up about Harry Kane. That's what he genuinely believes.
My Twitter timeline is going to be all Harry Kane truthers and anti-vaxxers trying to be my friends now. These are not people I want to hear from. I do not want to hear from you.
Okay. Let me then say that, dear anti-vaxxers, I picked James out there just to get a rise out of him. As far as I know, he is one of the most compliant of people. Now you're going to get other kinds of people getting on your case. Yeah. You can't win this world, can you?
They can. Fuck those guys.
Last word, anybody, on the last 24 hours? I mean, you watch a lot of football, Jack, and we all do, but it must have been fun to be there.
Yeah, I think it was the best game I've been to since Ajax, as well as having similarities to it. I think I can't actually think of a better Tottenham moment since Ajax.
Certainly sacking Mourinho, some would say.
Mourinho, sacking Nuno.
6-1 at Old Trafford.
The Lucas de Bergwijn sub, which effectively ended the Nuno era. Yeah, I guess winning at 6-1 at Old Trafford
By the way,
amazing...
sorry, hang on. There's a tip in there. Nuno's a genius. Bergwijn's amazing.
Yeah,
it was a good substitution.
Yeah.
What were we thinking?
Bergwijn is good. James, I mean, I don't know if you agree, but that does feel to me like the best Tottenham result and kind of high since Ajax.
I don't know. That's 6-1 at Old Trafford, I think. I mean,
but
without
true,
fans,
but
it kind of feels
fans,
a bit like...
I do kind of feel like everything that happened during... All the football that happened during COVID has a bit of an asterisk on it simply because of no fans.
Yeah, I know.
It just doesn't feel like football. And I also think that it's not going to be remembered in the same way. None of it.
Yeah, I think that's really true. Now, when you look back and you watch them, you're like, oh my God, this is mad. One that I would say, because it did have a few fans, was the 2-0 win over Arsenal in December 2020. That had like 10,000 fans and at least felt like a moment when Son scored that incredible early goal and Spurs were top of the league.
Well, it was 2,000 fans, wasn't it?
No, was it only two?
Yeah.
Maybe. But at least there was some...
I didn't get a ticket either, so it was rubbish.
Yeah, that. I mean, obviously that was a big debit against it, but...
Yeah, maybe it's unfair saying that none of this COVID-era football counts, but I kind of feel like it doesn't. So, for example, City, who obviously do have an attachment to, City won the league in the COVID season, and they reached the Champions League final, and yet my memories of watching those games, and I watched tons of them on TV, my memories of those games are really thin. You know, it's not memorable. It's not memorable stuff.
Well, partially because not only was there nobody in the ground, and of course that whole thing was horrible, but we have to remember our mentalities had also been changed by being locked into our houses, not allowed to go to the pub and the street. We were watching the game through different eyes as well as them playing it in front of no eyes at all. And if one thing, historians of the future will look back on that 6-1 at Old Trafford, James, and say, did that really happen? There's nobody in the ground as far as I can see. And Tanguy and Ndombele made a late run into the 6-yard box to open the scoring. I'm suggesting they will say there's something weird about that game. And I would not be surprised if in years to come, UEFA were to investigate it. Listen, chaps, it's been an absolute joy and an education to be with you all again. And as for you, the listeners, if you're not already a subscriber to The Athletic, you can read all of our articles on Spurs and everything else on the site by going to theathletic.com/SpursPod. And right now you can get 33% off a full subscription. We'll be back on Monday after another resounding victory over Chelsea. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Charlie and James and Jack. You've been here at The View from the Lane.
The Athletic.
Of course, I don't know which of you are very big on anti-vaccination and outside the Houses of Parliament screaming and shouting every day. So,
who would you guess is the most likely?
Oh, James.
Yeah, James definitely.
Yeah. Absolutely, James. Yeah. What you're saying? You're telling me to F off. Everybody else is nodding sagely, and they know you. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.